You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on into your UNC preview here on the Locked On Syracuse podcast. Tyler Aki and Tim Leonard, thanks so much for checking out the show today. Be sure to hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also check us out on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse. We're always tweeting out the latest SU buzz and all that stuff. So be sure to tag along with us even for the game on Tuesday night against UNC, 9 o'clock Eastern time. Again, this was supposed to be Syracuse and Clemson, but because of Clemson's COVID pause, everything kind of worked out because UNC all of a sudden had an open date as well. So Syracuse and UNC, they're making up a game that was supposed to be played about a week ago now. And this is a very interesting matchup, Tim, when you break it down. You and I were kind of talking about it before we hit record today, but these teams could not be more opposite in how they play basketball. Yeah.
No, it's so true. I mean, UNC's thing all year is they have not been able to shoot the basketball. They're shooting it terribly from two, terribly from three, really just jump shooting wise, they're shooting it poorly. But this is kind of a UNC team on steroids. Like, what you're used to seeing from the Tar Heels is great rebounding. And, you know, Syracuse has had problems with them because of that in the past. But they've also kind of low-key been bad at shooting for a while now. And this team really has had their problems. Just looking at their field goal numbers before, when I was sort of prepping for this podcast, I mean, they're 262nd in the country right now in three-point field goal percentage at 30%, and their effective field goal percentage on KenPom is 46%, so 286 in the nation, which, to put that in perspective, Syracuse has not really shot the ball well this year either. I think we all could agree
on
that.
They've been average.
Yeah, they've been average based on the COVID pauses. That's definitely played a factor, but 51% is their effective field goal percentage. So UNC is still 5% below that. That's how bad it has been jump shooting wise for them this year.
On the contrast, though, their defense has been pretty solid. Pretty much you invert the numbers that they've had on both sides of the ball. But I think the one glaring thing that stands out to me in terms of their lack of shooting is the fact that this is a team that has a lot of talented bigs, both offensively, defensively, and rebounding the basketball. And that two-point percentage is still awful. It's still, I mean, you look at it just from a two-point perspective, they're shooting 46%. And you're talking about four of the premier big men in the ACC are on this team.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting that lightly when I say that. I mean it when I say four of the most talented big men in the conference are all on this team. And unfortunately for Carolina, those four guys can really only occupy two spots on the floor at once. But that is a heck of a punch. And the rotations with the big men for the entirety of the game is that you know you are going to have a superior talent advantage out there at the center position at all times during every single game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down here in North Carolina, so I follow this team closely. I kind of hear what the buzz
Tar Heel
is around
Tim,
this team.
As some like to call you.
That's the nickname you throw out every once in a while. But anyway, they have been an enigma all year. I mean, no one can really figure out why they have struggled so much, because you're right, the talent is eye-popping. I mean, they've got literally three five-stars in their front court when you count up Baycott, Kessler, and De'Ron Sharp, and then they've got who many believed was the ACC preseason player of the year in Garrison Brooks. So that's four of the best bigs, like you said, in their front court. And honestly, like, Garrison Brooks has been benched at times this year. No one has really stepped up, and no one is playing to the level that their talent suggests. And it's a very weird team because in typical UNC fashion, they can go very deep. They play 10 guys, but they're also just super inexperienced. They're 325th in the country, inexperienced. And six of those 10 guys are freshmen. So in a year like this, where you got a limited offseason, we've seen it with Kentucky, we've seen it with Duke, a lot of these programs that rely on freshmen year in and year out are just not really getting what they normally get out of the freshmen right out of the gate here because the offseason was shortened.
And two of those freshmen are situated in that front court with De'Ron Sharp and Walker Kessler. You watch the Tar Heels a lot more than I do. What do you think, in your eyes, is the best rotation they throw out there? When they are winning games and they are looking at their best, which has not been often very much this year, but when that happens, what is the rotation that team is throwing out there that they capitalize on?
So Leaky Black has been their best player for the past couple games. Now he had a good 16-point effort, I believe it was, in their win against Miami. And their last two games have been kind of eerily similar in scores. I think it was 66-65, a winner over Notre Dame on a Leaky Black game winner. And then 67-65 after Playtech hit a floater to beat Miami. So it has not been pretty. Like, Miami is a team that they are much better than talent-wise, and they're still scratching and clawing just to try and get a victory there on the road when Miami was down a couple players. But their best lineup, the weird thing is, lately Roy has gone to Kerwin Walton as the starting point guard. Even though he's not really a natural point guard, he just benched, at least to start the game, Caleb Love and RJ Davis, because those were two talented five-star freshmen coming in that have just not panned out. And Caleb Love's numbers are really gruesome to look at. We can get into them as this podcast goes on, but I think Walton has actually been their best guard, and that's out of, like, necessity, because the guys that should be the guards are really not delivering. And then definitely you would have Leaky Black out there, and Sharp has looked very good at times. He had 25 against Notre Dame, so he's got a little bit more pop. You'd still have to put Brooks out there, and I don't know. I mean, you'd like to get some more shooting, but that's kind of the flaw with this team, is they have guys like Puff Johnson, who are freshmen. He's Cam Johnson's younger brother that's supposed to be a good shooter, and he just hasn't been able to hit shots, really, because he's a freshman and he didn't have the offseason, I guess, that you normally would have.
So I'm looking at, from a shooting perspective, again, we know that this is a dominant team with the bigs, but I'm looking on KenPom right now. And when you look at the usage ratings that this UNC team has, of their top five guys, only one of them really shoots threes. Like, De'Ron Sharp's taken two. Garrison Brooks has taken three. Walker Kessler's taken two. But of their top five guys in terms of shooting and three-point attempts, really only Caleb Love takes them. And like you said, his numbers are awful from three.
Terrible.
I mean, he's shooting 18%. If you thought that Joe Girard's had his struggles this year, or Buddy Boeheim's had his struggles this year, they are nothing. I mean, I think this UNC team would love to have someone who's been producing from three the way that Buddy or Joe has. Like, that's how dire the situation is for the Tar Heels shooting the three.
Exactly. I mean, it's amazing to think, but going from Clemson to UNC, UNC is a much more winnable game at this stage of the season for Syracuse, and that is hardly ever the case when you're going from Brad Brunell and Clemson to Roy Williams and UNC and recent memory, given the track record of UNC and Syracuse. But Caleb Love's numbers, you're spot on. He's also shooting just 27% from the floor, period, to go with that 18% from three. He's averaging 3.5 turnovers a game, and he's only playing 28 minutes. That's the thing about UNC. They run out 10 guys, and they're in short spurts. No one plays more than 30 minutes a game. So it's the opposite of the Jim Boeheim theory, where basically they're just throwing out different lineups on different lineups and mixing in substitutions all the time on you, where Boeheim hardly ever substitutes. The weird thing about UNC, when you look at their stats, it almost looks like a typo when you go to their points per game, because their leading scorer is averaging 11 points per game. I think it's Garrison Brooks right now, and then Baycott might be right up there, but only two guys are averaging in double figures in points per game, and it's 11 from Brooks and maybe 10.5 from Baycott last I looked. And then everyone else is like 5 to 9 points per game. So it is super, super balanced. And Syracuse is balanced too, but they've got four guys in double figures, I believe. Maybe even five when you factor in Dolja. I think actually they do. They have five guys, as I look at it now, that are averaging right around 11.5 points per game or more so far this year. UNC has no one that even gets to 11.5. I mean, that's just kind of crazy to show the difference in how many minutes they play and how they operate their rotations.
Again, it could not be two more polar opposite teams. I thought you brought up something interesting when you mentioned Kerwin Walton and how he's kind of emerged as the point guard. And this is something that I think Syracuse can take advantage of, because one of the big problems with this UNC team is the turnovers. And Although Kerwin Walton, his assist rate is pretty good, even though he doesn't qualify for some of the statistical leaders, but his assist rate, he's assisting on about a quarter of the possessions that he's in and that he's used in. But his turnovers are right up there too. And it's even worse for Caleb Love. He actually has a pretty good assist rate at 23%, but his turnover rate is actually surpassing that at 25%. This is a team that turns the ball over almost a quarter of the time. And if Syracuse can take advantage of that, and kind of like we saw in the Georgetown game, not just take advantage of it, but turn it into points, that's one of the things that I think will help Syracuse in this game is if you can capitalize off of these North Carolina turnovers, you're going to find yourself with a lead for a good portion of the game, I'd imagine.
Whether Sidibe plays in this game, and we'll probably get into that during the prop shop, is honestly, I mean, in a perfect world, I would wait to make my prediction until I knew that information. That's not going to be possible here today for us as we record on Monday afternoon here. But yeah, I mean, that is the key to this game, because if UNC wins, it's just by sheer rebounding and will. Like, they are a tremendous rebounding team, as they always are. They're third in the country in offensive rebound percentage on KenPom. They're getting 40.7% of their potential offensive rebounds so far. So, I mean, they're basically getting two trips down the floor every time they go down, and that's against the 19th toughest schedule in the country. Now you get Syracuse, which is traditionally not a great rebounding team, and I would be, if I didn't see how they kind of managed to out-rebound Georgetown and show some flashes and get more help from the guard spot, and we did see them last time they played UNC, they out-rebounded them, shockingly, in that blowout game. Now, the game before that, in late February, when Tom Brady and that whole crew was in town, the last Dome game, UNC won the rebounding battle by 10 and kind of did what UNC does to Syracuse most of the time when they meet. So the key to this game is, I mean, it's so simple, but it's just one of those keys that you can't really overthink. It's, can you control UNC on the glass? Because if it's UNC's guards that have to beat Syracuse, then they're probably in a pretty good spot. Part of me thinks that these guards can't stay this cold forever. But in general, when you look at the stats, it's a bad shooting team that's getting nothing from their guard plays, and they're turning the ball over a lot and not passing it great. So that should be a good matchup for the 2-3 zone as long as they can get rebounds.
All right, college football may be in the books, but that doesn't mean the sports calendar is slowing down. No, no, no. We've got the NFL playoffs in full swing, and of course, college basketball and the NBA are back and moving. So you got to get in on all the action. There's no place that has you better covered, and only one place really that we trust, and it's betonline.ag. You can sign up today for a free account. Go to betonline.ag, and if you use our promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, you will get a 50% welcome bonus. So you put in $100, you're going to get $50 on the house to play with. There's so much going on this week, including the Syracuse-UNC game, and you can get in on the action at betonline.ag. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Put your money where your mouth is, and don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Let's take a deeper dive into the rebounding here, because I think this is something that it might almost be a little deceiving, and you kind of brought it up, how this team is getting two chances down the floor every time, but that doesn't necessarily make them a good offensive team because of the fact that they are getting so many opportunities, and that's partially why the shooting percentages are so low, but at a certain point, that matters a little bit less when you are getting two trips down the floor. Now, I will say this. North Carolina has played, and I look at their last two games as perfect examples, against Notre Dame and against Miami. North Carolina has played against teams with way inferior bigs. Like, I'm looking at the Miami game, Nigeer Brooks is solid, and then Dengok off the bench, and then you think about Notre Dame, Juwan Durham's not some guy who's going to play super physical with you. I would say that both of those teams have very similar big men makeups of Syracuse. And North Carolina has dominated the rebounding battle in both of these games. I think against Notre Dame, they had 21 offensive rebounds in that game. And they still have won both of those games by a combined 3 points. So just because Syracuse loses the rebounding battle doesn't mean that they're going to necessarily lose the game, or at least not be in the game at the end.
That's a good point. The other thing is the Miami game, you said it, they should have manhandled them rebounding-wise. I look at the final rebounding numbers and I watched that game. I guess it was 45-39 is what I'm looking at right now, rebounding-wise. Advantage UNC, but they were plus 6 rebounding margin against a Miami team that on paper is kind of like Syracuse, maybe even worse than Syracuse, rebounding the basketball at times. So it's odd. Like, this whole UNC season has just been odd because they have this unbelievable freshman class. It's the best freshman class in Roy Williams' tenure at UNC. Like, that doesn't come around very often, and we're not just saying that, that's just the stats. It's the super deep 6 freshman class that is loaded, which means they're probably going to be good next year, but we kind of said that while they were struggling this past year. So it's just puzzling because at this point, you wonder, how are they not getting more out of the talent they have on the floor? From a talent perspective, if we were like in a video game simulation here, and you could calculate all the rankings and then add them up and average it out to get an overall team rating. Like, you know, when you're playing 2K and it says like Pacers 85 overall, right. Celtics 88, UNC's overall rating would be way higher than Syracuse from a talent standpoint.
Right, yeah.
But the numbers kind of make it seem like Syracuse should win this game or at least be close in this game. And again, Sidibe is huge, and that's really going to be the key determiner for me on how good I feel about them going into this game, whether he plays or not, and how effective he is and how much he's able to play. But yeah, it's just puzzling that UNC has not been able to get anything out of their talent. And I guess one of the problems is four of their best players all play the same position. When you talk about Baycott, who's probably been their best player this year, Sharp, Brooks, and Kessler. And you can only have really two of those guys out there in crunch time, and then you're forced to play some of these guards that have played really terrible.
And I think, too, when you look at the big men, one of the interesting things to me is that there will always be some sort of presence out there among them. Because, first of all, there's four of them. And second of all, they don't really fall out because there's four of them. And you can just cycle them in and out. And quite frankly, they don't get in a ton of foul trouble either. I mean, I'm looking through it right now. Baycott fouled out against Iowa. Okay. You're going up against Luka Garza. That's a tough matchup. He's going to draw a lot of fouls. So obviously that's not going to play well into your favor. Garrison Brooks has picked up four fouls in about half the games, but he hasn't fouled out once this season. Sharp had four against Iowa too. Again, a tough matchup with Garza, but really hasn't had foul trouble against anyone else. And then Walker Kessler had four against Stanford, and Oscar Da Silva is a pretty good big man out there. So when I look at it, there is going to be some sort of big presence. And I think the Sidibe thing is interesting too, because remember when this matchup was first in its foundation, back when we thought it was going to be about a week ago, we thought that, okay, Sidibe is probably going to be back. All signs indicate that he will be. But now we sit here on January 12th and we're not exactly positive whether or not he's going to be back. And even if he is, Jim Boeheim alluded to this on his Zoom conference this week with the ACC coaches Zoom. And he basically said, if Sidibe plays, he's not going to play much. And I found that to be one of those things where, all right, if he's not going to play much, he's going to go out there, maybe give you a couple of hard fouls, but how effective will he really be? So I'm starting to wonder if the whole Sidibe thing is even going to play that much of a factor in this game in the first place.
Yeah, I don't feel great about Sidibe. I really don't. I don't feel great about what we're hearing and everything, but in terms of a matchup to watch in this game, and we can kind of get into a couple of them now. Like I said, the obvious one is the rebounding, and I think that is kind of the key to the game. Keep UNC off the boards. It's so simple, and it's what everyone will be saying, but that's just the truth of it. Another matchup that might kind of go under the radar because of that is Caleb Love defensively against Joe Girard. And it won't always be Caleb Love guarding him because UNC does cycle in so many bodies and they haven't even really been starting Caleb Love of late, as we talked about. But I'll give Caleb Love this. He has a lot of defensive potential. For as bad as he has been on offense, he will kind of harass you 90 feet up the floor. He'll get in your airspace, and he has the makings of being like a tantalizing defensive prospect in the NBA level someday. When you just watch him play, he checks a lot of those boxes. Sometimes it doesn't come all together, and he's been in his head a lot this year. But Joe Girard, as we know, has been good against bad teams. And against the good teams like Rutgers that have been able to close off their airspace and play him tight, and when he's drawn a lot of defensive attention, he has struggled. And Syracuse, whatever you want to think about Joe Girard and Kadari Richmond, when Joe Girard's playing well, Syracuse is at its best right now. When he's making shots, their offense is at its best right now. And I worry about Joe Girard against not just Caleb Love, but the rest of the UNC defense, because as you said, this is a good defensive UNC team, and they will guard you pretty tight on the perimeter.
So I actually am going to kind of flip that around here, because I had Joe Girard, but I had it on a different guy. I had it with RJ Davis, and that's what I'm kind of intrigued to see how that plays out, what matchups we see, because that could potentially change the game. If we're looking at Joe Girard on RJ Davis, because Joe Girard is not going to have a size advantage against most matchups throughout the entirety of this season. But that's one where he will. He's 6'1", and he's going up against RJ Davis, who's 6'160". Again, a real baby for a freshman. And if Joe Girard has these size advantages and he can maybe play a little more physical against RJ Davis because he knows he's the bigger guy, I'm starting to think that this might be a favorable one. And maybe we see Caleb Love dished out onto Buddy or something like that. Because I think that could completely change the complexity of the game. And it could be one of those things where if it's Caleb Love on him from the beginning, well, then it could be a big Buddy Boeheim game because Buddy's going to have a major size advantage. Or if RJ Davis is giving Joe Fitz, well, then this could be a sizable Kadari Richmond serving of minutes in this game. Because now you're talking about 2 6'5" guys in the backcourt, and you're taking out a guy in RJ Davis who plays about 29, 30 minutes a night. And you would make him pretty ineffective defensively if whoever he has to guard, he's got a 5-inch size disadvantage on every single time down the floor.
Yeah, this is a big game for Joe. I mean, really a chance to silence the critics, because as we've talked about a ton on this podcast, we've gone back and forth on him like I think the entire fan base has gone this entire season. And he looks good in the last game and it gives you optimism. But if he really wants to establish himself as being a guy that we can trust game in and game out, he's just got to be more consistent. And this is where you show up. A big game on the road that could be a resume boosting win for sure, regardless of how UNC has looked so far. Anytime you get a chance and you pull off a victory on the road at UNC, that's a huge, huge win for Syracuse, given the history of this matchup as well and how they've struggled against them and how it, on paper, is problematic how good UNC is rebounding. So, huge game for Joe, and you're right, it could be RJ Davis. I think the way UNC operates and how many bodies they cycle in and out, the bottom line is there's going to be a lot of good perimeter defender options to go against Buddy and Joe in this game. And the question is, can Buddy and Joe be as effective as they were against Georgetown, or are they going to play like they did in some of the earlier games where Syracuse really looked out of sync offensively because they just weren't hitting shots?
You know, it's funny, you brought up the whole rivalry aspect, but I shouldn't say rivalry aspect, but the head-to-head since joining the ACC. I mean, talk about one of the great hammer-and-nail matchups between these two teams. I mean, Syracuse, after, obviously, Syracuse gets the better of Roy Williams back when he was at Kansas in 2003, but ever since joining the ACC, this has been extremely one-sided. And it just kind of felt like one of those things. Like, even back in the Final Four season, Syracuse played UNC 3 times. It was close once. And it's just kind of amazing that Roy has just had Boeheim's number ever since he got to the ACC. And the matchups, I mean, for the most part, they're not even that close. I mean, we see this Carolina team put the hammer down on Syracuse a good number of times.
No doubt. The good news is Syracuse returned the favor in the last game, and UNC's not playing that great. This isn't a traditional UNC team, so I do think there's a chance here for them to win this game for sure, and it really is going to come down to the rebounding.
Yeah, the win last year in the ACC tournament snapped a 9-game losing streak against the Tar Heels for Syracuse, so they are 2-9 since joining the ACC. Probably, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I would imagine that is the worst record they have against a single opponent ever since joining the conference. All right, let's get you some more numbers here. We do this every single preview show. It's DeBundo's Digits. Anthony DeBundo from the Daily Orange going to tell you what you need to know heading into this matchup.
The numbers you need to know. Anthony DeBundo breaks down the biggest stats for this week's Syracuse matchup. Stats, everybody. DeBundo's Digits. If you ain't taking stats, take the class. On the Locked On Syracuse podcast.
There's no team in the ACC that's been a worse matchup for the Orange than the Tar Heels. 9 of the 10 meetings have gone to Roy Williams' crew, and they present significant matchup issues for the SU zone historically. For one, the Tar Heels love to run before the Orange can set up their zone. The Tar Heels' pace and tempo is down a bit this year to 74th, but they are 52nd in offensive possession length and will look to run in transition even after made baskets. There's no possession too short for the Heels. The main reason they've had success against the Orange, too, is the offensive glass. Syracuse has not been a good rebounding team for years in their 2-3 zone, and UNC is consistently one of the nation's best on the offensive glass. They rank 3rd in offensive rebounding rate, which is buoying their offense, which has otherwise been subpar. North Carolina cannot shoot. at all. They're 262nd from three, 267th from two, and 246th from the foul line. The Tar Heels don't have the guards they usually do who can light it up from beyond the arc, but they do have the bodies inside that the Orange will have trouble matching up with. They rank 9th in height, and Quincy Guerrier will need to be massive on the glass if Syracuse wants to pull this game off as a small underdog. Forwards Armando Bacot and Dayron Sharp both rank in the top 45 in offensive rebounding rate, and they have three players inside the top 260 in block rate. The Orange may need to keep more players into rebound, which could hurt their chances to run out in transition. They might play a little slower, but when UNC turns it over, as they've done quite often, ranking 287th in turnover rate, the Orange could hurt the Heels in transition offense. And the Heels' size makes them a good defensive team on the interior, altering shots and preventing second chances, but they have been hurt from opponents' three-point shooting, and a high proportion of their points allowed do come from beyond the arc. Syracuse was able to blitz the Heels in the ACC tournament last year on the back of great shooting, and will need to do the same again if they want to win. KenPom projects the Orange as slight underdogs in Chapel Hill, a place that Syracuse has never won. Syracuse has a 38% chance to win, projected defeat 73-70. But according to Bart Torvik, the Orange have a 49% chance to win, projected to lose by just one, 72-71. Torvik's model is much lower on the Tar Heels than KenPom, ranking them number 56 instead of number 29. And since we've been critical of him in the past on this podcast, we have to be fair and give some credit to Joe Girard. In terms of offensive efficiency, Saturday's win against Georgetown was his second best game of the year. He went 6 of 11 from the field and added 8 assists, posting a 137 offensive rating. And while he struggled to get his offense going in both meetings with the Tar Heels last year, he will be pivotal down the stretch on Tuesday night and will need to make shots if the Orange want to pull off the small upset.
Our thanks, as always, to Anthony DeBundo for bringing you all the numbers you need to know. Go check out his work at The Daily Orange, and you can also find him on Twitter at Anthony DeBundo. All right, coming up next, we're going to get into the prop shop and all that stuff. But first, 2020, mercifully over. Time for a fresh start for everyone, and time for a few more wins as well. If you're betting this year and want more wins, you got to listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They're picking everything, college basketball, football, NBA. They've got locks all winter long. Who knows? They might even have something for this game. So go check out Locked On Bets. It's the perfect way to get a primer on the gambling day. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by betonline.ag. And speaking of betonline.ag, Tim, we get to debut our Betting Edge segment brought to you by betonline.ag. We're going to tell you what you need to know and where you should maybe lay your money heading into this UNC matchup. That's coming up next along with our prop shop picks.
Hey guys, with the ever-increasing number of models and makes out there, it's impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. So there is a great alternative option out there right now. It's rockauto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years now. If you go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers today, they have everything for you. You can get engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, or even just a new carpet. Whether it is for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. rockauto.com has been huge for me in the past 6-7 months, really, and it's just a great way to kind of avoid going to the counter and asking those questions that you don't really know the answers to anyway, and then you're worried about them ripping you off, only for them to end up telling you that they don't have that part in store and they're going to have to order it. You can just go to that same interface that they're looking at these traditional chain storefronts and get that same part delivered directly to your house in a safe and orderly manner right now. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com.
All right, time for our favorite part of the show. It's the prop shop. We're going to give you some hypothetical things that we are looking for in this game. Syracuse UNC coming up 9 o'clock Eastern time. ACC Network tonight for those of you that are all planning to watch, and we know you are. We know you are. So we got to get into a recap of last week, Tim, because you were on a heater there,
please,
my friend. 6-0 for you. So start listening to what Tim's giving out on these prop shops for whoever may be playing them. So I went 2-4. So you're taking a hefty, hefty lead on me right now. You're up to 23-16 this season, plus 800 overall. I am actually the opposite of that. I am 16-23, down 680 overall. So I've got to make a little bit of a comeback this week. And we start with this. We start with our beloved Marek Dolezal. I don't know if you've heard the news, Tim, and this is pretty devastating stuff. But according to Buddy Boeheim on one of the Zoom press conferences, Marek found out he can't eat pizza for 2 weeks now because of this.
Yeah.
But he,
I think it was
our question
Packer
now,
and Durham, right?
Was it Packer and Durham? Is that where
yeah.
it was? But we have to ask, our first prop shop play for the game, will Marek Dolezal have a new tooth in place for this game? And to that I say, if he can't eat pizza for 2 weeks, I'd imagine he has a new tooth in place. He probably had some procedure done already. So I'm going to go with Marek will have a new tooth in place at the start of this game.
Yeah, this should be a freebie for us. I kept it in there just because we're never going to get another chance, I don't think, to bet or hypothetically bet on will a player have a new tooth unless it's Syracuse hockey someday, 30 years from now, playing at a Division I level maybe. I don't know, but this just was too good to pass up. I'm with you, I think, because of the pizza comment, which poor Marek, I've got pizza on the docket tonight for dinner. I mean, that's oof. That's universally just
yeah.
a great food to have. I feel for the guy. 2 weeks,
you know what?
Maybe
I feel bad
lot,
too,
but
I mean, he gets so much crap on every single telecast because he's, what, 180 pounds, 190 pounds, it feels like. I feel like pizza is one of those ways to pick up some weight, and especially against UNC, you maybe want to have a whole pie to yourself to bulk up a little bit against the big boys of UNC, and now he can't even do that. So he's going to have to find out something. What does he have to eat now? Like, is it baby food and stuff like that? Like, is he just eating a lot of Jell-O now? What is the knocked out tooth protocol here? In terms of
we
what you can
eat. We need a dentist to clarify this. This is, you know, just, there's a, I don't know.
There's a former Syracuse player, Sonny Spera. I believe he follows me on Twitter, and he is a dentist now. And maybe he's
really?
Got all the answers to this. So maybe we need to ask. I wonder if he, I think he still is in the Syracuse area. And maybe he even did the procedure on Marek. Who knows? But yeah, so that's something to watch for. Will Marek have a new tooth in place for this game? Next up. This is the burning question on every Syracuse fan's mind, but will Barama Sidibe start in this game? I think we could even double down on this. Will he play in this game? I think that
yeah.
almost is something that needs to be asked as well. So I guess we'll only count it as one. We'll only discuss whether or not we'll only make it a play of whether or not he will start. But we can get into the discussion, too, of if he's going to play or not. But what do you think?
Let's just make it will he play.
Okay.
I'm going to say no to starting.
Yeah,
like
I'm
sure,
going to say no to starting, and, you know, I'm also going to say no to playing. I have not heard a lot of encouraging things, so I don't know. And again, I feel like we've been wrong on this every single time, too, so maybe
I was right
just,
last time.
Yeah, or I guess, yeah,
six
you were
out.
Right last time, that's right. but I feel like it's time that maybe we just jinx it together, so let's
yeah.
get Barama out there, and let's say he's not going to play.
So why have you, I feel like you've changed your opinion, though. I know it's just a guessing game. Like, this is a tough one to predict in reality. But have you heard stuff recently? Because even last time
we talked on this
podcast.
I think just the way that Jim was talking, that, okay, if he plays, he's not going to play a lot. And I don't think, I mean, playing him against UNC is the definition of throwing him to the wolves, right? Like, that is
yeah,
not.
Yeah, but you also desperately need him, like we said. So
I know, it's tough, but
to,
I.
Yeah.
But is a shorthand or is a not fully healthy Sidibe, is a Sidibe that's a step slower something that you really want out there against UNC? Is the question that you have to ask yourself. And I think the answer is no. I think the answer is no. I think I would rather throw a guy out there like John Bohl or Jesse Edwards. And I'm not saying they're going to give you immaculate defense, but they've got five hard fouls that they can give you. So maybe
yeah.
that's the way that you got to go about this because you're going to need some bigs in this game.
Yeah, a hot take for me would be we see one of Edwards or Anselm, probably Edwards, because Anselm has been a question mark on his status as well of late. I do think Boeheim will give them some spot minutes, especially if Sidibe's out. I don't have good vibes about Sidibe, and again, maybe I'm just trying to jinx it into the opposite existence, but I'm just going to go on record that like it doesn't feel right in my gut that it's taking... This it's not even that it's taking this long, it's that he practiced five times, like I said, and then Boeheim...
Full practices.
Yeah, Boeheim was like, he gave us great practices, and then he just wasn't up for going against who was it, the Pitt that they played last Wednesday, and then he still couldn't go for Georgetown, and now Boeheim's like, I don't know, we'll see. That scares me, given his history, so that's all I'll say about it.
We'll see, yeah. I mean, the soreness thing, I think, is the result of conditioning, but hopefully we're wrong, and hopefully he can give you some quality minutes. Again, Boeheim said that when he does come back, he's not going to be playing a lot, so we'll be monitoring that. Next up, when will we see the Roy and Jim Boeheim highlights from 2003, back when Syracuse met Kansas in the national championship game? Are we going to see it, Tim?
So it's an ACC network broadcast. I'm glad we clarified this.
Yeah.
I think that rules it out. I don't think we'll see it.
I was going to use the same exact logic. Great
right,
minds
we're in
thinking
the same
alike.
Thinking.
Yep. ACC network, cross it off.
Right. I think if it was an ESPN broadcast and it's like, oh, remember Roy was at Kansas and they met? Yeah, they might go to it. But also, these teams have played so many times since that game. There's not a whole lot of novelty there. Like, I think Syracuse fans remember it. UNC fans even remember it, even though it wasn't their team at the time.
But they knew Roy was coaching already. They knew Roy was their next coach at the time.
Right. That's true. So I think they've already exposed or used that footage enough as is.
Absolutely. All right. Next up, we got two more for you here, and then we'll get into our game spread and totals. UNC, the rebounding margin. We know they're a dominant team on the boards, especially on the offensive side of the glass. Let's set the number at 10.5 for the rebounding margin. Will Syracuse cover the rebounding margin that we're setting for UNC? We're making it 10.5.
I got faith in the Orange, Ty. I think they scratch and claw. I saw more from them guard-wise rebounding. Boeheim had 5 boards. Girard had 3 boards last game. They're going to need a wholesale team effort in this one. UNC's average rebounding margin to this point against good competition is 12.5, I believe, plus 12.5. So at 10.5, for them to be 10 or less in terms of the rebounding advantage, seems like they should be able to do it, but the numbers say that it's going to be tough for Syracuse to do that. I do like the fact that UNC, despite having a huge personnel advantage over Miami like they will against Syracuse, they only out-rebounded them by 6 last game. And I feel like turnovers and everything are going to be a problem for UNC. So I'll say Syracuse does keep the rebounding battle closer than expected.
I'm actually going to curve on you here. I am going to say that UNC is going to cover that 10.5 margin. And I don't know, this is going to have to be, if Syracuse is going to cover it, I'm going to need to see a big game out of Alan Griffin. I think that's the consensus thing that we have to look at here, because
no
foul
trouble from Quincy,
right?
None.
Right, exactly. And that's going to be a lot easier said than done, but we know Griffin can be a prolific rebounder on this team. We've seen it. He's had double doubles with rebounding so far this season, so we're gonna have to see a pretty solid performance out of him on the boards if Syracuse is going to end up pulling off some sort of miraculous effort on the rebounding side of things, because we know UNC can get it done with the best of them. All right, next up, who will lead the Orange in scoring for this game? Here, let's do a little roll call here. The lines: Alan Griffin plus 120, Buddy Boeheim, his odds have gotten way, way better, plus 125, Joe Girard plus 180, Quincy at plus 185, Marek plus 220, Barama plus 330, and Kadari plus 330.
I'm torn. I guess I'll go Alan Griffin. He's kind of due for a better game. And I don't know. I don't think Joe's the answer here because of the perimeter matchup. That scares me. I don't think Quincy's the answer, although he could be. It's just there's so many big bodies to contest him, and he does so much of his scoring down low and getting offensive putbacks and stuff. So I think they'll keep Alan Griffin a main focus of the offense, and he'll be taking a lot of shots in this game. So I'll ride him at plus 120.
I think Quincy's 18-footer really has to be on point in this game for Syracuse to have some success on offense, because he's not going to be able to just get the layups and putbacks that he's been able to do for a lot of games this season. I don't know if I'm fully confident in that quite yet. I'm actually going to go with Joe Girard in this one because, like you've mentioned, the matchups are going to be critical, but I think he could end up getting some very good matchups. And in some of these games, especially the bigger games like the UNC's, we see him rise to the occasion. I feel like as a guy who is super emotional, wears his heart on his sleeve, these are the games he gets up for. So give me Joe Girard to lead the team in scoring. All right, now time for our new segment, our Betting Edge presented by betonline.ag. So the game spread so far in this game, we've got the BetOnline number already out at +4 as of us recording this. So let's start with the spread right now. +4 for Syracuse. Can the Orange cover that number?
Man, I am so torn. I'm going to say UNC covers. I do think there is some value in taking Syracuse at the money line because they can win this game. UNC's not good, and a lot of the reason why you see them at 29 in KenPom and you see them getting some votes in the AP poll is just because they're UNC and they have a brand name. When you look at a ranking like the Net, they've got them at 52. The Net is extremely objective, and it's just looking at your history to this point, and no preseason rankings are influenced in that ranking there. So UNC, I will say, to cover, just because I think if you played this game 10 times, UNC might win it 7 times. But 2 of those wins for UNC, they just play like they should have been playing all year long. Like, I do feel like there's a part of me that is scared that this is the Caleb Love breakout game, or this is the RJ Davis breakout game, because it's got to come at some point, right? It's almost like the way we're talking about Joe Girard before he broke out against BC, except it's even magnified more because we're talking about 5-star guys, and we're talking about guys that have been shooting the ball worse than Girard, which is probably hard for Syracuse fans to wrap their head around. But as we said, that's been the truth of it. So UNC has a little bit more punch, and the rebounding still scares me. The lack of Sidibe and his health being a question mark scares me. So I'll take UNC to cover.
I'm going to take Syracuse to actually cover in this game. I think just the way that UNC kind of hangs around with some of these teams and the way that they are kind of prone to having the ball in their hands for that last shot, I think Syracuse, they're not going to win the game, but I think they can cover the +4. So give me the Orange with the points in this one. All right, next up, we've got the game total here. It's set at 146 from our friends at betonline.ag. So a pretty high scoring affair they're expecting here. What do you like?
I'm going to take the under. I know on paper these are two fast-paced teams, but I will say UNC's KenPom numbers and adjusted tempo and kind of their pace on offense, average possession length, in UNC history, they're always up and down the court really, really fast. Last year, they ranked 87th nationally, which was the first time they were outside the top 25 in 6 years in that category. And this year, they're 74th nationally in pace. So they're down a little bit because they're not getting as much fluidity from their guard play, and they're turning the ball over more. So given that, the lack of shooting from UNC and the fact that the zone does kind of slow you down already as well, I'll take the under.
I'm also with you on the under there. I think that, yeah, the style of play, again, we kind of talked about that, but these are two teams that I think are going to get slowed down and drawn into some longer possessions. And also the fact that UNC just doesn't shoot the ball well, and to me, the offensive rebounding aspect of this game, that to me signals a play on the under here. So let's go with the under of 146 right now. Again, that line on betonline.ag. If you liked either of our picks on the game spread or the total, check them out, betonline.ag, and you will get your opportunity to put some money down and hopefully come out a winner if you're taking some of our picks. So, all right. That's going to do it for us here on this UNC preview. We'll be back to recap it all for you tomorrow morning, and it's going to be a good one, I think. I know we said that a lot of these games have not been close, but these are two very different teams that are kind of outside the mold of what we're used to in terms of what their makeups are and all that stuff. So really looking forward to seeing this one play out on the court down in Chapel Hill. So for Tim, I'm Tyler. We will talk to you guys with a full UNC recap tomorrow morning.